Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Details paid for by Robert Levenger Insurance Agent.
The IRS, the world's most aggressive collection agency. They can seize your property, bank account, and garnish your wages. They cause sleepless nights for millions of Americans. Don't be one of them. If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS or state, get protected today. Call 800-242-3186. Coast One Tax Group, protecting your bank, home, and your sleep since 2008 with hundreds of five-star reviews and an A-plus on the Better Business Bureau. Call Coast One Tax Group, 800-242-3186. Stanley from New York owed $93,000. The IRS placed a levy on his bank account. Coast One released the levy and settled with the IRS for $2,000. Mark in Michigan owed $225,000. After Coast One stepped in, Mark walked away paying less than $1,500. Call Coast One now. A 10-minute call can save you up to 93% on your back taxes. Get your fresh start today. That's 800-242-3186.
Sponsored by Coast One Financial Group.
This is AM 850 WEEI Boston, the home of Rome, Boston College Sports, and you better you bet. AM 850 WEEI, always live on the free Odyssey app.
The day shuts down. The games light up. This is BetMGM Tonight with Brad Evans and Pat Boyle on Westwood One Sports.
Hey-o! Welcome back in to BetMGM Tonight here on Westwood One Sports. He's Brad Evans. I'm Pat Boyle, and we are brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Download the app today. Please gamble responsibly. Hour number two of our Monday night show starts right now. You can watch the show live on YouTube. Just search BetMGM Tonight and hit that subscribe button. You can watch the show live on Twitter at BetMGM Tonight. You can listen to the show on the Westwood One Sports app, the Odyssey app, SiriusXM Channel 375, and hundreds of local affiliates throughout North America. Let's talk some pucks, shall we? We go to the guest line now. We're going to bring in one of the great hockey insiders here of the last two decades, Frank Saravalli. You'll find him on Twitter at Frank_Saravalli. We got a big game seven tonight. We got the Western Conference Finals starting on Wednesday. Frank, it's Pat Boyle and Brad Evans. Thanks so much for being part of the show. How are you, man?
Yeah, pretty good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. We're pumped up for Game 7 tonight. The two best words in sports, right? Back to the KeyBank Center in Buffalo for Canadiens and Sabres. And the fewest amount of goals in a game this series, Frank, has been five. I mean, that's put a ton of pressure on these goalies and the coaches. And so my guess from stuff that I've seen on social media today is it's going to be Dobish in net, Jakub Dobish in net for Montreal, and Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen for Buffalo. Do you tend to agree? And more importantly, how short of a leash could we maybe expect for either of these goalies if we get an explosion of goals again in the first period?
The leash is going to be shorter than the space that I have left on my belt. I mean, it's going to be incredibly tight in the sense that, look, this is the first series that we've had in the NHL in 13-plus years that has featured all four goalies on both teams without any injury coming into play. The Sabres have been searching for some kind of dependability with their goaltending situation. Luukkonen comes in, as you mentioned, in game six in relief after the Habs got off to a great start. He didn't allow a goal on any of the final 18 shots that he saw. So he is that game seven starter for the Buffalo Sabres. And no confirmation. I'd imagine that the Montreal Canadiens are going back to the guy who won them game seven in round one in Jakub Dobesh, who, as you mentioned, really poor outing in game six, where the Sabres scored seven unanswered, leading to Jacob Fowler spelling him in relief. You know, I'd say there was probably like a 5 or 10% chance that Fowler started game seven only because he's a guy that bailed out their season this year, but still Dobesh is the guy that won them game seven. They need him to play as well as he did against the Tampa Bay Lightning 2 weeks ago.
Frank, let's head out to the West, shall we? We have Colorado and Vegas, two franchises that know how to win a cup, but the Avs have just looked so good so far in this postseason. Are they going to avoid the President's Cup curse, or does Vegas find a way to knock them off? So what do you like in terms of Avalanche and Knights?
So I'm going to pick at you a little bit on the President's Trophy. Everyone says it's a curse, but if you go back in the history of the league, it's about a 22 or 23% chance to win the Stanley Cup. I don't know about you, but I'll take that as having the best record in the league, and those are my odds heading into the playoffs. It's been a while since 2013, since the team that's won the President's Trophy, as you mentioned, has gone on to win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks did it, and they were off to an incredible start that year in that lockout shortened year. But in this case, the Avs kind of look a little bit inevitable, and the Golden Knights have had a bit of a tough time in two different series to open up these playoffs. They were overwhelmed by the speed of the Utah Mammoth in round one. Had the Mammoth had any closing capability, they probably would have knocked off the Knights in that series. And then you've got Anaheim, this upstart team that can do it all sorts of different ways with size, with skill, with speed. That also gave Vegas a run for their money. So the Knights arrive pretty battle-tested. Mitch Marner has been in this sort of incredible playoff trance and flow state that's been really fun to watch. He almost looks AI-generated at times. That's how ridiculous he's been. they've gotten clutch scoring from Pavel Dorofeev in big spots, including an OT. But this Avs team, my only question with them is their health. They've got some banged up players, and I'm really concerned about the overall status of Cale Makar. My guess, and they never tell you anything at this time of year, I don't care how good your sources are, they clam up, that Cale Makar is probably something like 60%. Maybe this number of days off between games will help the Avs, but it appears like he's got some kind of shoulder injury that just look at the way he left their last game and also look at how little he's shooting the puck from the point. I'm concerned about Makar, but they should have enough talent to knock off this Knights team and play for the cup.
Oh, good stuff. Frank, going north of the border, Edmonton Dispatch head coach Chris Knobloch. With that in mind, a two-part question here. Number one, how fast does Knobloch find another gig? And number two, who should be the team that goes and snags him, Frank?
I don't know if it's going to happen super fast. Look, I know you're thinking, Frank, this guy just stepped into the league and his first two seasons behind the bench went to the Stanley Cup final. Why wouldn't someone be all over him? I do think that sometimes when coaches leave Edmonton, and maybe Jay Woodcroft is another example, there's a stink that needs to waft away for a little bit. And the way that Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl were critical during the course of this season probably didn't help his case. Not only that, but he's got 3 years remaining on a deal that didn't even kick in yet, and sometimes teams shy away from that. I think LA is very interested in Jay Woodcroft bringing him over from Anaheim. Ken Holland and him worked together in Edmonton, and he had a sterling record, if not playoff record, that Knobloch then came in midseason and took that team to the cup in his first year. The big question is, what will Toronto do and how wide of a net will they be casting? Does someone like Chris Knobloch fit the scope of what they're looking for? Will he interview there? I'd imagine they're probably going to be talking to 15 people as they begin their process, if not more. And be curious to see if Knobloch gets a look there.
We're talking to Frank Saravalli here on BetMGM tonight, Westwood One Sports. He's Brett Evans. I'm Pat Boyle. Frank, one of the top hockey insiders here for the last decade plus. You can find him on Twitter at Frank_Saravalli. Frank, let's look at the other side of the coin here. What do the Edmonton Oilers do? You know, the majority of the rumors point to Bruce Cassidy, but the Golden Knights, despite firing Cassidy at the end of March, keep denying teams the chance to interview him, or at least as of a couple of days ago. What are you hearing on that front? And do you think it's a formality that by the time Vegas's playoffs are done and Bruce Cassidy can interview with whoever the hell he wants to, that he's going to end up being the next Oilers head coach? Or do you think maybe Craig Berube or somebody else should be at the top of that list? What do you think ultimately happens with the Oilers' next head coach?
So it's not a formality. As of today, as of this afternoon when I last asked about it, the Oilers had not been granted permission to speak to Bruce Cassidy. And in fact, the Golden Knights have a scheduled appeal hearing with NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman on Tuesday after they were sanctioned a second-round pick and a $100,000 fine to Coach John Tortorella for their deliberate, or as the league called it, flagrant violation of the league's media access policy. So that's supposed to be tomorrow, not confirmed if Vegas is actually showing up. But nonetheless, I would imagine that one of the side conversations that the commissioner would be having with the Golden Knights would be the status of Bruce Cassidy's permission to interview. Now, I've been speaking to league sources, and they aren't going to press the Golden Knights because they can't. Contract law is such that if it says very clearly that Bruce Cassidy is property of the Golden Knights until they give him permission, whether he's coaching or not, he has one full year left on his deal at $4.5 million. It's within their right to pay him that money to not work for someone else. Now, that isn't the customary norm or what typically happens with coaches that are fired. And I can tell you also, speaking to current NHL head coaches, that they're not happy with how this has played out because they don't want to see anyone getting blocked from what is viewed as a quality opportunity to coach elsewhere. But that's also part of the nature of the beast. The golden rule is that those who hold the gold make the rules. And in this case, the Golden Knights paying him $4.5 million, that stands out. So curious to see what happens tomorrow in this meeting. Will that penalty, the second round pick, be reduced or rescinded? Will the Golden Knights have to get down on one knee and kiss Mr. Bettman's ring? That also is going to be some interesting theater. But I'd imagine that it's not totally disconnected that will be mentioned at some point tomorrow.
Frank, let's stick again in Edmonton. A lot of Edmonton questions tonight. Does Connor McDavid ever win a cup with the Oilers? What are your thoughts there?
I don't know. I mean, I think the landscape has changed pretty significantly. There's this thought process that has existed, and I've probably been at fault for helping perpetuate it, that if you look at all of the very best players in NHL history, they inevitably get their hands on Lord Stanley's mug, and their fingerprints are usually all over it. And you can go down the list of the all-time greats. The league has changed so much since then, when 16 out of 21 teams made the playoffs, to now 16 out of 32. Expansion, salary cap. I don't know that it's the inevitability that I thought it was. And getting to two cup finals and now getting closer to his 30s, that 20-year-old decade evaporated in a hurry. And usually teams that make it to the final and lose don't get back there again. So I think it's a bit of an uphill challenge. I don't think it's impossible, but I do think, and this isn't me being critical of Connor McDavid, it's actually just stating a fact, in these moments when he's gotten to the precipice, and I'm going to include the Olympics in Milan, he hasn't exactly performed at his best. The last few games of the final, and particularly game 7 in his first try, the second try wasn't as compelling. And then the Olympic gold medal game, I don't know if the enormity of the moment, the pressure of the situation has gotten to him, but I think he wants it so bad, you have to consider that maybe this is one of those things that he either has to go elsewhere to do, or that it's just not going to come easily.
Good answer. We're talking to Frank Saravalli here on BetMGM tonight, Westwood One Sports. Frank, in your opinion, let's go back to the Game 7 here tonight, and then who's going to play the Carolina Hurricanes in Game 1 in the Eastern Conference Finals on Thursday. In your opinion, who has a better chance of taking down the Hurricanes in the Eastern Conference Finals? Is it the Buffalo Sabres or is it the Habs, the Montreal Canadiens?
I think it's the Canadiens. I think they are a bit more battle tested. One thing that stands out as two things that stand out for a negative for them. One is the amount of hockey they've played. They will have played 14 games after tonight. The Carolina Hurricanes have played the minimum of 8. And I know we're going to engage in the rest versus rust debate over the course of the next couple of days, with the Canes having a modern day record of 12 days off between games. But the amount of hockey plus some of the injuries that have piled up for the Canadiens, I know that Mike Matheson, Caden Gooley, and Josh Anderson are all not close to 100%. That's slightly alarming. But I do think we touched on the wear and tear factor on Dobesh, who's played a lot. The Sabres have not had their goaltending together for any part of these playoffs. I think getting to the conference finals for a team that has been picked apart sometimes defensively. There was this question all season long that had reverberated around Buffalo. They call it river hockey. They're maybe not as detailed. They found a way to win in the playoffs, but there is no more detailed team in the league than Carolina. That I think either one of these teams are in for a tough test, but I think Montreal at this stage or this point in time would give them a better shot.
Mm. All right. And then, I know you mentioned the rest versus rust. So I guess health is probably more important than anything else, Frank. So I'll just ask you a different question then instead. Finally, I know they're out of it already. But Bill Guerin, GM for the Minnesota Wild, did say that a contract extension for Quinn Hughes, the hero for Team USA in the Olympics, that's their top priority this summer, a contract for him. How likely is it, in your opinion, that Quinn Hughes gets a big contract extension this summer from the Minnesota Wild rather than make him wait until next year?
Oh, they'd love to get that done, signed, sealed, and delivered to lock him in for as many years as possible as soon as July 1st, the first day eligible, rolls around. They have zero interest in having that hang over their heads for the season, and I'd say probably pretty likely, if we can take Quinn Hughes at his word, that he's really interested and open to re-signing in Minnesota.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.